Hello, everybody. This is Dane Gentry with the Standing Back Up podcast. Today, I'm here with my guest, Jenny Sue Jessen. Her story is from survivor to CEO. How are you doing today, ma'am?
I am fabulous. I'm so excited to join you and your friends today.
Thank you so much. Tell me about Compass 31.
Yeah, so Compass 31 is an international counter-trafficking organization. We are working, we have restoration work happening in Thailand, Bangladesh, the Middle East, and a new outreach center in Greece. And then we have a prevention tool to equip people to understand the risks and realities of trafficking that's actually operating in 43 countries.
Oh, wow.
So that was founded that in 2011 and have been hard at work since then.
Yes, ma'am. I know in today's world, I'm sure, unfortunately, you stay pretty busy.
Yeah, I do. It's a very epidemic problem around the world.
Yeah, I guess if there's, I don't know how you can say anything good about it, but at least right now it is a topic of conversation in our world.
A lot of people are talking about it. Now, yeah. If we can translate that talk into action, then we stand a chance.
Yeah, that's the whole key. So if you want, you can tell your story, how you got involved and all that. It's up to you what you want to share or not share.
Absolutely. A lot of people ask, you know, I don't think anybody grows up dreaming like, oh, I'm going to be in counter trafficking. That's not necessarily the dream job. It's hard work. I'm faced with crushing, brutal realities every day. But I have found, and I've seen some of your episodes, I think you found this as well, a lot of the things in our lives that we would define as traumatic, actually, rather than define us, equip us for this greater kingdom impact.
Yes, ma'am.
And that is the case with my story. I grew up in the Midwest. A lot of people would call it the buckle of the Bible Belt, Southwest Missouri. And my grandfather was a wicked bad guy. And so he started selling me to other men for sex at the age of 4. And that first event, you know, my life turned upside down and inside out with just, well, unthinkable violence. We don't need to go into the bloody details. But after the unthinkable had happened, my grandfather wrapped me in a blanket, put me in the back seat of the car to take me back home again. And that was the first time I met Jesus, was in the back seat of that car. The sunset was amazing. The sky was on fire with color. And Jesus sat in the back seat holding me on his lap. He didn't mind the tears. He didn't mind the snot. He didn't mind the blood. He just held me on his lap and whispered to me, "I've got you, baby. I'm big enough and I'm not going to let you go." And he didn't. What followed was 14 years of being raped for profit. In kindergarten, I was praying every night that God would just let me die. So that's the first, you know, baby version of suicidal ideation. In second grade, I went to church with my grandparents on Sunday. My grandfather, the wicked bad guy, was also an elder in his church.
Oh, wow.
So went to church with him on Sunday and ended up sitting in the pew behind the man who had paid to rape me the night before, 8 years old. So grew up with such confused messages about who I was, about what my value was, about who men are. I came to believe, certainly for those early years of my life, that men were just fundamentally dangerous because that was my experience with
men. Of course, yeah.
And I didn't know what to make of God because I kept encountering Jesus in the midst of these traumatic events, literally showing up, capturing my attention, keeping me sane. He kept coming for me in the violence. But again, my grandfather was involved in church. And what I experienced there was just, it was hard to reconcile.
That's horrible.
God's goodness and his sovereignty, right?
That's horrible. As you're telling me this, it's just my skin's crawling. You know, I lived a bad life, you know, but never nothing. I was not one of them guys. I was never a sexual aggressive guy, never no prostitution, no strip clubs. And I've said it many times in my life. Thank God I didn't have that in me to be that way, because I don't think there's anything that a person worse than a person can do to a child.
Right.
That is, and then people in church. I mean, my God, right. It's just okay.
It is astounding, and it's common. And I think trafficking is thriving in the American church in large part, one, because we're not talking about it. It's an uncomfortable topic, and you're not supposed to say sex if you're a Christian, apparently. It's not something you can talk about. And then we tend to think, we assume that everybody in the church is a sheep. And in fact, there are a lot of people in the church that are wolves in sheep's clothing. And we really, really need to practice discernment, learning how to know the difference of what's happening. I was in school, I was in church, and my exploitation continued for 14 years.
That's you said the key word, discernment, and that's something that they don't want to teach you in church. They don't want you to have that, as we know.
Right. Absolutely.
I think
unfortunately, like, why? Yeah. We would be so much stronger and healthier if we had it.
You know, people, what's the word I can use? People have kind of made Jesus now out to be weak. And they seem to forget about a couple of things that was, to me, really big in the Bible. And one is, if you harm one of these little ones, it'd be better if you have a millstone tied around your neck and be thrown to the bottom of the sea.
Yeah.
They seem to forget that. They didn't want to call themselves a Christian. To me, that verse right there says a whole lot, because unfortunately we knew what was going to come, or he did.
Right.
And that's why, as you were talking about him being with you, he knew what he was going to use you for. And if we can find anything comforting or good out of what happened to you, I guess it's where he led you to today.
Yeah. You know, there's an interesting thing about that, Dane. For a lot of years, we hear in our Christian ease, like, God works all things together for good. And yes, he does. I would argue that verse is often taken out of context and cross-stitched on pillows and isn't really the original intent, because it kind of, that idea, in my mind at least, in my growing up and my experience and my wrestling with God and faith, was it was almost putting God on the defense. Like, okay, this terrible thing happened. What are we going to do? Let's pick up the pieces. Let's put her in counter trafficking. Like, right?
Right.
We'll use it for good after this. Like, he's trying to repair damage that he didn't know. Right?
Right.
But if you look at the whole context of scripture, specifically Job, Job's one of my favorite people.
Mine too.
I hang out with Job all the time.
Mine too. Yeah.
And one of the curious things is, Job's whole situation is initiated because God picks a fight with Satan. Satan's roaming around the earth. He shows up before God. God says, "Where have you been?" He says, "I've been roaming around." And God does this thing. He goes, "Have you seen my boy Job? You can't shake that one. This boy is righteous." And Satan's like, yeah, but if. Mm-hmm. And God goes, "Okay, you can go this far and no further." And then Job's testing begins, right? And then Satan comes back again after Job's lost his herds, his animals, his children. And the same thing happens. God goes, "Have you seen my boy Job? You can't shake that one." So what God is doing is, he has this vote of confidence in Job. Like, no, right. This one, he's mine. You can't shake this one. And so rather than being on the defense, what makes more sense to me, and you please feel free to argue if you don't agree, is that before time began, before the creation of the world, God saw you, Dane, God saw me, Jenny Sue. He chose us in him before the creation of the world to be holy and blameless in his sight. That's Ephesians 1:4. Which means he created you and I with a specific purpose. And God, with that purpose, with that knowledge, can go, hey, have you seen my girl, Jenny Sue? You can't shake that one. He knew when I was born that I was going to have this global counter-trafficking ministry. And then Satan threw all the demons of hell at me to prevent me. It's a flip of the script. Yeah. It's not that God's trying to patch up the broken pieces and use it for good. It is God had my destiny scripted. He knew where I was going to be, what I was going to come from, and what I was going to accomplish. And the enemy has thrown everything possible at me to undermine it. And instead, he didn't win. Yeah. Here I am. I'm fighting the good fight day after day.
And that's awesome. I agree with you 100%. I've never looked at it that way, but I definitely agree. Because I didn't know anything about church. I didn't know anything about God when I grew up at all. And it kind of came my way through jail and prison, really. Where God really got a hold of me was through someone else. It was another guy that I knew who was worse than me. And I've never been scared of a lot, but if there was any man on earth that could put a little bit of fear in me, it was this guy I'm talking about when I was young. And next thing I know, he's a godly man and never looked back. And that's when I was like, man, there might be something to this. And that's where it all began. And then I looked at different scenarios throughout my life and thinking, man, you know, how am I alive? How, you know, I did all this prison time, no more scars on my body than I went in there with. And I can go on and on with the things he walked me through. And that's kind of how he got a hold of me. And then that's why I like meeting people like you, who have a different story, but in similarities in a lot of ways. We both agree that God had a destiny for our life.
Right. And he meets us in the darkness and he calls us into the light. You know, the very first verses of scripture are, there was darkness and chaos and void, and the Spirit hovered over the darkness, and he called light into existence. And really, that's the context of my whole life and work, is there's still darkness and chaos and void everywhere we look, and yes, still the Spirit hovers, and still he calls light into existence, and it's good.
And it's good.
And that's what I get to see unfolding in my work, both here in the U.S. and globally.
So. Yeah. I met another girl I had on. She started out modeling when she was young, and kind of the same thing. She got, she didn't ever get sold into trafficking, but she was still escorted out and them kind of things. And it was kind of so messed up in her head that she thought it was okay that, you know, she wasn't realizing at the time that these men were just using her and of course, taking all the money and all these different things. It's very sad. And I'm glad that these stories are finally coming out. You know, I think there's a lot of people, high powered people who are going to try to keep it out. But I do believe 2024 is a year of a lot of stuff coming to the light, and it needs to.
That would be amazing.
It would be
little by little. What can we do but keep swinging our swords and wait for,
I know a lot of people, I know a lot of people that I've met through this and social media now that are on your side. That's for sure. There's a lot of people who are saying, you know, enough is enough. It's sad that, I mean, even without the sex trafficking, you know, you don't meet many women who something didn't happen to them as a kid. And it's just beyond me. I'm glad I don't understand how a person can be that way, but I don't understand that. I don't get that at all. You know, to harm a child that way. You know, it was done to my wife as well. And I see the lasting effects of that, you know, all these years later. And that's what people are doing. And then, you know, what really makes me mad is, you know, I did 21 years of my life for what they call property crimes. And here yet you have someone who harmed a child and they were getting out before me, getting less time than me.
Yeah.
And that's, and then now in Tennessee, they protect them, you know, whether people agree with violence or not. I will say at one time, those people had a hard time in there. And then they started changing all these laws and now they make it a hate crime. If you, and I'm just like, what about the child? You know,
Well, they're shifting everything around the conversation. Both, you know, those of us that are subject matter experts that have experienced it, we're trying to shift the conversation to be more empowering and hopeful about the potential of those that have endured it. But on the other side, there's this whole shift of, instead of identifying these perpetrators as pedophiles, now they're calling them minor attracted persons. You know, they're arguing that it is just a variation of someone's sexual preference or identity, as opposed to being heterosexual or homosexual, that they're just a minor attracted person, that it's wired into their DNA. And so these shifts in conversation really are moving towards trying to normalize an atrocity. And we can't allow that to happen. No. We have to shout back into the void. Like, no, that's not okay. It's not, no matter what you label it, it's still not okay.
What that says to me now is it brings a whole big circle together in my mind of why certain people push so much for certain things to be passed, just as we'll just say transgender, you know.
Right.
Now I get it. Now I understand, because there's a deeper agenda there.
Right.
Because they know that it's going to come out on them, and they're trying to make it normal. Like, hey, you know, no big deal. The power. Do powerful people, this is probably a question, I don't know if you can answer this or not, but do powerful people push back against y'all, like trying to keep y'all quiet and them kind of things?
Yes and no. Certainly when I was revealing my own exploitation and confronting my own perpetrators, gosh, 20 plus years ago, my grandfather really aggressively had me stalked and phone tapped and threatened and that kind of thing. And he was a wealthy, powerful guy. He was a big fish in a little sea in small town, nowhere, Missouri. He was the big guy on campus, if you will. So I did have that experience with my own exit from exploitation. As an organization, like I said, we have restoration projects in 5 countries. We have ongoing prevention work in 43 countries, but really we're just little bitty. We're a gnat, we're a mosquito. So even if we're doing outreach in red light districts and I walk out of a brothel or a bar with 3 girls that come home with me and come into our restoration program, if I go back the next week, there's going to be 5 new girls to replace the 3 that came out.
Yeah.
And so the traffickers at this point, at least in the places that I work, I'm a nuisance. I'm not a threat. They replace the girls or boys that come out pretty much as quickly as we can bring them out. And for that reason, I don't really get silenced or threatened much. Some of our work in red light districts, I get followed or I get hassled a little bit by the bouncers or, you know, the muscle for the brothel owner, but not any real threat. And in reality, I mean, it's a good, fair question, but in reality, 10 out of 10 people die. Like, none of us are getting out of this alive. So why not live our purpose to the fullest?
I agree.
And so, yeah, there's some people that get irritated, but no actionable or viable threat. God knows the number of my days anyway. At some point, either an accident or a disease or a person out of their mind is going to help me take off this body and usher me into glory. So I might as well just keep speaking. Just keep doing what I'm doing.
I agree 100%. I want people to, I want your voice to get very loud. That's what I want.
Yeah.
We're going to push this episode probably more than I've pushed any of them before.
You know, the thing about surviving, I learned very young that my survival depended on my submission and my silence. Yeah. And it has taken a whole lifetime to unwind that. And yeah. So I'm so grateful for you sharing your platform, because every time I have the opportunity to have a conversation like this, it amplifies my voice. I get to reclaim what was taken.
Yes, ma'am. And it's gonna get blasted all over my social media. I'm starting to grow on social media. I'm new to social media. I'm an older guy, and so the social media hadn't really been, but I finally understand how important it is. It's if you want to do this stuff, you gotta grow on it. So I've got somewhat of a following. And then I have people that I'm friends with that have way bigger following than I do. One guy in particular, and he was talking about not worry. He's kind of that way. He's just like a very outspoken person on different subjects. And he was just talking about it. He said, someone asked him, you know, hey man, you might want to watch a little bit. You're going to get killed. He said, I'm not watching nothing. If that's what's going to get me killed, that's what's going to get me killed. I'm going to speak. And he's the perfect guy for this. He's the one who's going to, I'm going to chop this thing up and send him some pieces of it and let him blast it out there too. And cause it's sad. And it's, you said boys a while ago, that's kind of a question I got. So I guess, is it just as bad for boys as it is girls? Is it going on the same way for them?
It is. Trafficking really crosses all genders, all ages, all socioeconomic status, all culture. It's global. It's in our small towns. It's in the U.S. It's everywhere, unfortunately. And boys absolutely are trafficked. It depends on which sector of trafficking you're looking at. In sex trafficking, I think it's well over 70% in sex trafficking. The individuals being trafficked are female, and the remainder being male, or what they're calling non-binary.
Yeah.
But then in labor trafficking, it flips. So boys are more likely to be labor trafficked than girls.
When you say labor traffic, what do you mean by that? What do you mean?
So labor trafficking would be in farms, in fishing, in factories. So a lot of agricultural work. For example, if you buy shrimp, frozen shrimp at your big box store, like a Walmart kind of store, at least 30% of our shrimp is coming from the slave trade in Southeast Asia.
Oh, wow.
A lot of our denim is being farmed from forced labor in cotton fields in Uzbekistan. So there is labor trafficking here in the U.S. A lot of it is agricultural. There's also women that are labor trafficked in the hospitality industry. You know, they're working in a hotel, but they're not paid. They're working in restaurants. They're working in massage businesses, what we call illicit massage businesses. You know, the ones that are open from like 10 p.m. to 3 a.m.
Yeah, yeah.
Those with all dark windows and a storefront.
Yeah.
So labor trafficking is somebody's taken by means of force, fraud, or coercion. They're promised a job, but then once they get to the job, often it's not the job that they were promised, and they're not paid for it. They're immediately in debt, and they spend years trying to work off their debt, but every month their debt, and I say perceived debt because they don't actually owe these people anything.
Right.
But every week their debt is growing because they ate, because they slept, because whatever. So labor trafficking is a thing here in the U.S. and globally as well.
See, I don't think anyone thinks of that when we hear trafficking. At least I didn't. My thought automatically goes to sex trafficicking.
Coffee beans, our chocolate, a lot of it is farmed. Our electric vehicles, this is one that's super problematic. Our electric vehicles, this whole global green agenda, our electric vehicles, their battery is a significant portion of that is built with cobalt. Mm-hmm. And 3/4 of the world's cobalt is in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And so children are dying mining cobalt so that we can feel good about driving electric vehicles. And not only are children dying mining the cobalt, but we're totally destroying the environment of this beautiful, beautiful part of the world. I got to be there last summer. It's just exquisite, and it's being mined and destroyed to save the planet.
Yeah, I saw a lady. It was on very brief, and she was talking about that, about the truth behind the batteries and all this stuff that really, what it really does to the environment. And, yeah. Mm-hmm. And all that stuff. And it's very sad. Give me the best advice you can give anyone, teenager girls or whatever, to watch themselves to keep this from happening to them.
You know, the best advice I have, I think, goes across the board, not only for those who might be victimized, but for us as concerned citizens. And that is, we have to open our eyes. So many of us are busy. I call it scurrying and scrolling. We're scurrying from point A to point B. I got to get to school. I got to get to work. I got to pick up the kids. I got to go to soccer practice. I got to get to my job. I got to go. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, even while we're doing that, I see people driving and they're scrolling through their phone. You know, they're walking, scrolling through their phone. They're not aware of what's happening. So for those who might be victimized, situational awareness is our primary defense, being aware of what's going on around us, using discernment. Unfortunately, in sex trafficking, 76% of the traffickers are a family member or a friend or an intimate partner.
Wow.
So it's not really a snatch and grab kind of thing. But if you're aware of your situation and you're aware of what your intimate partner is doing, where his money's really going, why he's asking you to have sex with somebody else for money, that gives us insight. So situational awareness first and foremost. And that is true for all of us, because if you, any of your listeners that have kids that are in elementary school, middle school, high school, you're going to have birthday parties. Kids are going to be at your house. You can easily count the kids around the table singing happy birthday and go 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. At least every third kid is going to experience sexual assault by the time they reach the age of 18.
That's horrible.
And that is the gateway to exploitation, because trafficking is always an exploitation of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And those kids that have been wounded by somebody they love, you know, maybe a babysitter, maybe a parent, maybe an uncle, maybe a neighbor, but somebody they trusted, becomes very, very vulnerable to other perpetrators who are going to identify that vulnerability and love them, bomb them, win their trust, and whisk them away into a place that is very, very difficult to escape from. So I think the solution for trafficking is all of us, whether you're think you're in a category of potentially being a victim or not, that we stop hurrying, that we see the people that are in front of us. You know, yes. The lady that's in front of me at the grocery store with a black eye, going, "Hey, are you okay? Do you need anything?" Even making a joke like, "Oh my gosh, did you run into a door? What happened?"
Yeah.
Giving her the opportunity to disclose, I'm not safe.
Yeah.
Because again, a large number of traffickers are intimate partners.
That's horrible.
And domestic violence and intimate partner violence and trafficking, they're distinct things, but if we had a Venn diagram, there's a huge overlap in the middle where they intersect.
Okay. One last question. Tell me how amazing how amazing your life is today.
You know what? The coolest thing, Dane, as hard as my work is, I often say it's like trying to empty the ocean with a thimble. Like I'm just, you know, slinging water and there's a whole ocean ahead of me. But in reality, I get a front row seat to watching redemption unfold again and again. And to see the best of humanity, to see these kids and these women and these men who have endured years of unthinkable rise to their full potential. And that part of my life and my work is so purposeful and joy-filled that on a regular basis, this maybe not is not going to make sense, but on a regular basis, I wake up in the morning and my face is tired from smiling so much in my sleep.
Yeah.
You know, like, have you ever been to a party and you laughed yourself silly and your jaws were tired?
Yeah.
I wake up like that from smiling in my sleep.
That's amazing.
Because my work is so full of glory and joy.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
I get to watch Jesus do what Jesus does. He still sets captives free.
Yes, he does. Amen to that. I want to thank you so much. We're going to get this out for everybody here as much as we can. Compass 31.
Yep. People can find me, compass31.org.
All right. We'll do it. Thank you so much for your time. We'll have you on again. You have any big news you want to share? Shoot me a message. Let me know. We'll get you on.
Thank you so much, Dane.
All right. Thank God bless. Have a good rest of your day.